Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to The Constitutionalist, everybody. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Jeremy Johnson, and I'm here with the other host, Travis Bull Johnson, the chair of the ConstitutionalRepublic Party.us here in the state of Minnesota, the beautiful state of Minnesota. Bull, how are you doing tonight, my brother?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Doing good. Just like anything else, the middle of the summer, when you're a farmer, it's just like you don't seem to stop. So it's almost a blessing that we have this show going on tonight because it forces me to take a break.
You know what, man? It's the same in the trucking industry. Me and Bull just been talking on off air here for, I don't know, the last 10 minutes or so. And we're talking about how busy both of us have gotten in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And we do truly apologize to our audience that tunes in. But I'm a truck driver over the road. Bull has a farm, and he's trying to raise animals, and he's trying to build a political party. And we just work. Life gets the best of us. That's all I can say. But I just talked to Travis, and I said, you know, Bull, we really have to try to be more consistent, and I know it's not Bull's fault, and it's not really my fault, it's life's fault, but we will try our best to be more consistent, but hang in there. If you don't hear us on a Tuesday night, doesn't mean we won't be back the next Tuesday night. We're trying our best, I promise you that. We're trying to be consistent, but we're also working, man, so, you know, it is what it is, so we do apologize for that. But anyway, we're back tonight. I'm happy to be back with Travis, and we're going to go. We're going to jump into the Sixth Amendment tonight. We've covered five amendments so far. We've got a long ways to go, and we're okay with that. And hey, when we run out of the Constitution to talk about, we will still talk about the Constitution. We'll just have special shows where you can call in. You can call in now if you want to. Anytime we are on air and we're discussing the Constitution, and you have a question or you have a comment or you can set us straight with facts, we welcome the phone call in. And that phone number is 516-387-1733. And if you get through, or when you get through and you can hear us over your phone, just press the number one. That lets my switchboard know that you want to come on air and have a conversation with us live on air. And remember, we do believe in freedom of speech as long as it's not disrespectful. Because this is a radio show, there are other people listening, and we can't, you know, have you coming on here and making a fool of yourself. Even though I fully support you saying whatever you want to say, just try to, you know, try to remain calm about it. But again, I'll repeat that number, and later on in the show, I will repeat that number again, just in case you didn't have a pen and a paper handy. That way, if you just write this down, that this number, because this is the same phone number for our Tuesday night shows called The Constitutionalist. It's also the same number for our Thursday night, or my Thursday night show called The Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. And that number will work on either show. You call in live, just like we are right now. Press the number one once you hear us over your phone, and bam, you're on air. I'll put you on air. It doesn't matter if you don't have to agree with us, you don't have to disagree with us, whatever you want to say, as long as it, you know, pertains somewhat to the conversation that we're having. So, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that phone number is 516-387-1733. That's the guest call-in number. And again, you got to make sure you press the number one. It doesn't ask you to, just press the number one. We'll get it. That's okay. Moving on, let's start this show off. This radio show, and let's try to educate each other. Because me and Travis have made it very clear throughout this process that we do not claim to be lawyers or experts at the Constitution. What we're simply doing is reading out the Constitution week after week and discussing it and giving our opinions and thoughts of what the Sixth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment or any amendment, what the Constitution means and what it stands for and what we believe it stands for. And so that being said, ladies and gentlemen, let me just read off the Sixth Amendment and we'll start having the conversation. The Sixth Amendment guarantees the rights of criminal defendants, including the right to a public trial without unnecessary delay, the right to a lawyer, the right to an impartial jury, and the right to know who your accusers are and the nature of the charges and evidence against you. Now, this is going to go a lot down a lot of avenues tonight, I'm going to guess, because I have a couple spots that I would like to highlight. One of them is a speedy trial or a public trial without unnecessary delay. And the other one, the right to a lawyer. Okay, well, I'll get into that a little bit later, too. And the other one, the right to an impartial jury. Okay, well, then your attorney gets to pick. You know, they ask jurors questions when you're in for jury duty. So anyway, so the Sixth Amendment guarantees, let's start with the number one. It guarantees the rights of criminal defendants in a speedy trial, a speedy public trial. Now, what that means to me, when you get arrested for a crime, whatever crime that may be, you do have to go to a couple different hearings before you get to the point of an actual trial. You don't get arrested for, let's say, DWI. You get arrested for, let's say, a DWI. You go into court to plead guilty or not guilty. And you give the attorneys a time to look over the evidence and try to figure out a plea deal. And that's what usually happens in most, well, I shouldn't say most cases, a lot of cases, where the defense attorney will get the evidence and say, well, I see this, I see this, I see that, or the prosecution may do the same thing. Depending on your record and your history, the defense attorney might be able to call that defense attorney or a prosecutor and say, listen, my client has never been arrested for anything. He made a mistake one night. He made a bad judgment. He has no history. Would you be willing to plea bargain this down to a reckless driving if he pleads guilty to a reckless driving and then maybe 15 days in jail or $500 fine? Or, you know, there's always stipulations somewhere along the line. And I can make an example because somebody close to me, I had to hire an attorney for. So I'm going to... I think I'll just go ahead and say what happened. My son was coming home from a family reunion three weeks ago or so, and he was driving a little bit too fast. He said, Dad, I knew I was speeding. I just didn't realize I was going that fast. And me as a truck driver, I've said to him a million times, I said, you always set your cruise. Why not set your cruise? Then you don't have to worry. There's nothing to worry about. I said, I've ran into thousands of police in the last 10 years going 3 to 5 miles an hour over the speed limit with my cruise set, and not once have I been pulled over for a speeding ticket in over 10 years. And I said, why weren't you using it? I just, you know, he's going to be 23 this year. Good kid, never been in trouble, ever, never, ever been in trouble. He owns his own home, has a full-time job. A dad always says, well, he's a good kid. You know, I hear that all the time, but he truly is a good kid. He owns his own vehicle, it's all bought and paid for. I seen the charges they put him on, reckless endangerment, because his fiance was with him. And I thought, I got to get him a lawyer. So I got a lawyer, somebody that I know. It happened in a county that our family attorney happens to reside in here in Minnesota, so that happened. That was a good thing. And so I contacted him, and he got a hold of my son. And after he got a hold of my son, it's attorney privilege. So I was out of it unless my son chose to prove or chose to talk to me about it, which he did. Yesterday, I believe, they made an agreement with the prosecuting attorney that they would drop the reckless endangerment because he had never been in trouble before. He got a speeding ticket for doing, 94 and a 55. Like, oh my God. So
that's going to hurt the pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, they were going to put it, I mean, they threatened him with 60 days in jail. And, you know, this isn't my first rodeo with the law either. I had a troubled past when I was younger, way more than my son, because my son is, he's a saint compared to what I was. But they got a hold of the prosecutor, and this is how the system, this is how this process works, ladies and gentlemen, according to our Constitution. Got a hold of the prosecutor. They agreed on a settlement that they don't even have to go to court. He pays a fine. He gets charged with a lesser, you know, a misdemeanor rather than, you know, a gross misdemeanor or whatever it may be, may have been, and has to pay a fine. It doesn't matter what the fine is. But now, you know, he went through that process. It scared the living bejesus out of him. So I hope he learned a lesson, and it is what it is. We all make mistakes. But that's how the process works. You get a hold, you get an attorney, and if you can't afford an attorney, one will be afforded to you. Like, you will get a defense attorney that's, they'll ask you how much money you make and how much you can pay for the attorney, and they'll figure out a reasonable settlement for you to pay your defense attorney. My experience has not been good with court-appointed attorneys, but that's just mine. Doesn't mean that they all suck.
But you get what you pay for.
You have an attorney. Right, exactly. So I just wanted to start the show off with an example of the first part of the Sixth Amendment, that, you know, if you can't afford an attorney, one will be afforded to you, or appointed to you, however you want to put it. So based on that start of the show, Bull, what do you think, what's your view on the first part of this, you know, the we have a right to an attorney and without unnecessary delay a public trial?
Well, I have a couple thoughts on it. One, you were able to get your son an attorney, and they were able to work out this deal. Would somebody who had to rely on a public defender have gotten the same deal? That is one of my big questions on this, because, again, it turns it into a multi-tiered legal system. If you can afford a lawyer who can put the time, the effort, the resources, and the personal relationship with the family, like in this case, it kind of gives a better opportunity for those with money compared to those who have to rely on a public defender who may have 20 or 30 cases on their plate, and they're each just a number. So while they're getting a lawyer provided to them, are they actually getting the service that should be required? So, I mean,
that's a fair assessment.
I mean, it's a great that they get the attorney and an attorney is provided for them, but I can't help but believe that they will not necessarily get the same benefits as somebody who could afford an attorney. So I do have some serious questions with this, concerns with the fact that you create a multi-tiered judicial system. Which, I mean, if you're already behind the eight ball, you're already destitute, you're already broke. I mean, these public attorneys do what they can, but my other concern with it is when you have these public attorneys and they have all these clients, how often does the speedy trial issue get pushed back because that defense attorney just does not have the time to properly prepare for your case? So they need to ask for delays so they have more time to get up to speed on your case because of their caseloads. That is one of the exemptions that they've Supreme Court has given for a speedy trial, has something to do with the scheduling issues. So I have some questions there on, again, if you're on the flip side, I mean, you're President Trump, who has a lot of attorneys, a lot of money, and they could start throwing roadblocks up to delay trials, because that's in his benefit rather than wanting the speedy trial. It leads me to the quality questions when it comes to the attorneys.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a fair assessment, what you just said. Fortunately, I was able to afford an attorney to defend my son. And honestly, if my son was, you know, constantly getting in trouble, sometimes hard love is the best love, or tough love, I should say. And, you know, I probably would have said, man, I've warned you over and over and over again not to do this, but he's never gotten in trouble. And I'm like, I knew he just messed up. But, you know, you're right. These people that don't have family, don't have, you know, the resources that I have or any of that, what kind of representation are they getting? I know, because when I was younger, like his age, I messed up a lot. And my dad did that to me. He showed me some tough love, and I deserved it. I don't hold no regrets about that or resentment. I went to court, and they said, can you afford an attorney? I said, I cannot. Well, one will be appointed to you. How much can you afford? I said, I don't really make that much money. I think I ended up having to pay $250 for somebody that literally didn't do anything for me. They didn't want to hear what happened. They didn't want to hear the story. They just, you know, give me my $250 and I'll stand in there and go through the process with you. Basically, fill out the paperwork.
Yeah.
And so I completely understand where you're coming from with that. So, yeah, the system, ladies and gentlemen, this is why Bull started the Constitutional Republic Party here in Minnesota, is because not only does Bull realize that the system is broken, but everybody that we are involved with in this, when we had our convention in Alexandria, we all know that the system is broken, and we're trying to take action to fix it. Our biggest hurdle now is to convince the population that the system is broken, because there is a very large majority of this population that think nothing is wrong and everything is okay. And the media says, why didn't you see that in the media? They don't even have a clue of half of what is going on in this country. And this is one of the issues, is the Sixth Amendment. And we, you know, me and you touched about that last week, Bull, or 2 weeks ago, Bull, when we were talking about, the J6 defendants. And we both said, you know, if they committed a crime, then hold them accountable. Nobody's here trying to defend anybody. However, they deserve the same speedy trial that a guy that, you know, punched another guy in a bar fight or any of that. They deserve the same speed. Well, the same system was set up for all of us. Wouldn't you say, Bull?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because as I was reading up on court cases to talk about tonight, the Supreme Court has actually given quite a bit of leeway as far as what a speedy trial means. And one of the things they put on there was the complexity of the crime can have an effect on what a speedy trial is. So a simple misdemeanor or a simple assault, the requirements for that being a speedy trial will be much quicker than something like January 6th that requires a lot more investigation. So I was in the same impression as you were last week. That is one of the crevasses they put on there, is the more complex the crime, the more time they have to do it for it to be considered a speedy trial. Now, one thing I did get that did catch my eye is the Sixth Amendment is one of the few amendments or few legal concepts, basically, where if a speedy trial was determined that you did not get a speedy trial, your case is dismissed, period. If you're convicted, it gets thrown out. I mean, you can be guilty of sin, but if the courts come back and say, no, your right to a speedy trial was violated, the only recourse is for your conviction to be thrown out. And that surprised me. I didn't really expect that.
But I how many times, my question would be, how many times have they actually executed that?
Probably not that many. I don't know for sure on exact counts. I did see it. They talked to it on a couple cases, but the case I looked at was like 8 years. 8 years from
okay.
the time he was indicted to finally went to trial.
Well, that's
there was a lot of,
I mean, it doesn't take 8 years to investigate.
No. And there's a lot of cravats they use on that, too, is where were you during – where was the accused during this time period? Is he in jail that whole time period? Then you're a lot more likely to be found in violation of a speedy trial. Whereas if you're out, free, able to do whatever, then they're not quite as strict on it. However, some of the cases where it came to play was a defendant's witness died because it was taking so long to get to trial. In a case like that, it could be thrown out for not being timely because if it would have happened quicker, then your defense would have had their witness to come to their defense. So there was a listing of seven or eight things that they had to look at when it determining whether speedy trial was afforded and what, as well as what did you do? Did you agree to it being delayed?
Right.
Such as going on with President Trump right now. He couldn't come back later and say his right to a speedy trial was violated because he's the one asking for the delays.
Right. And there's I think there's a reason for that, too, and I'll get into that in a second, but I wanted to make the point that we also – first of all, I want to make the point that when we say this stuff, me and Bull and everybody that we're involved with, we all know that it's not quite as black and white as we may talk it or make it to be. There's so many legal terms and legal avenues that you have to go through to get to the trial that you try to get to the trial that's going to make it favorable for you. And you got to go down a bunch of legal avenues for that. And that's where it costs you money. County attorney or a county defense attorney, whatever, probably is not going to be your best bet on getting the fair trial that you think you're going to get. But in the sense of J6, there are clients that have been held for over 2 years. Now, when I say that, it's because their attorneys have made different petitions to the court and have went down all the legal avenues they can to get this case. Either they can plea bargain down or get it dismissed. They're trying their best before they go to trial because they know when they go to trial, if they don't go down every legal avenue, they're probably going to have some problems because they're out to nail these guys. And listen, anybody that did something violent or beat a police officer or any of that, they should be held accountable. Anybody that did anything wrong should be held accountable. That's my opinion. I don't know what the circumstances were because I wasn't there. I have seen a lot of the J6 tapes from numerous angles, numerous people involved. There are a lot of people that were charged that should not have been charged. For instance, there was a field trip there where a girl happened to be standing up by the Capitol that got inadvertently pushed in, and they drug her down through the basement of the Capitol and roughed her up and put her in jail, and she had no intention of going in the Capitol. Well, she wasn't. She was on a field trip. She was a high school girl. And you know, a lot of people will say, well, they shouldn't have been there in the first place. Listen, it's your right to peacefully protest. It's your right to air out your grievances with your government as long as you do it in a peaceful manner. And I get it that it turned sideways. And I don't want to get into a whole – I don't want to make it a J6 session here, but that's just my opinion. I'll stop there. But Trump, my opinion on Trump is, why is he delaying this? Again, his attorneys are trying every legal avenue. They want to – try to get as much evidence to defend him as possible. They're looking at what the prosecutors are doing. They're going to go find, dig up whatever they can to try to exonerate Trump. But then there's a wild card in this. They cannot prosecute Trump if he's a sitting United States president.
Well, exactly, and that's what it looks like. They're trying to slow roll this to, if he does get elected again, and say he is, and say before he gets out, he pardons himself. I mean, is that the way the legal system is supposed to work?
No, and let's be honest, too, in Trump's defense, because I don't want to be on here, you know, be a Trump hater or a Biden hater or any of that, even though I'm not a very big fan of Biden right now because of the evidence that I've seen. But anyway, in Trump's defense, too, they've come at him with the kitchen table. I mean, they do not want him back in office.
Right.
He's a threat to the system. Now, but that being said, if he did something wrong, and they can prove that he did something wrong in court, then I have to stand behind our justice system, because if I didn't, I'd be a traitor to this country also. So I as much as I think Trump is what is good for our country right now, doesn't mean I'm not allowed to change as a human being. It doesn't mean that, you know, new evidence might pop up and I'd be like, whoa, wait a minute here, man. But right as what I see it right now, it hasn't gone to court. So for me to say anything is premature, and it would be unfair to our judicial system, even though I really have a hard time believing in our system at all at this point, because I think it's in deep, deep trouble. I think there's two tiers of justice in this country, and if you're not part of the club, they're going to come after you if you try to buck the system. But that's just my opinion, ladies and gentlemen.
By the flip side, if you have enough money, are you ever held accountable?
Right. It goes. I mean, let's be the devil's advocate. Because
he has benefited from that system for a long time as well.
It's just like the taxes. Everybody, release your taxes, release your taxes. So he releases them. And not to get into a whole Trump segment either, but I guess we will.
Yeah.
But he releases his taxes, and he shows that he paid this, and this. A couple of years, $500. Well, he's a multi-billionaire. Guess what? He's using the same system that you and I have, except he knows how to use the system, and his attorneys do.
Well, no, he can afford tax attorneys who know how to use the system that me and you can't afford.
Exactly. So don't – it's one of those things, don't hate the player, hate the game kind of thing. If you want change, if you don't think that's fair, that's why you need to stand up with us and say, hey, that's enough.
I'm just going to hate the rich at this point.
But, yeah, so that, I mean, there's your first, I guess, our conversation about the first part of the Sixth Amendment. Now, here's where we have a problem or an issue again. The right to a lawyer, we got that. The right to an impartial jury. Now, are you getting the same messages I'm getting, Bull?
Yep.
I want you to read those messages while I get into this, because I'll let you use your discretion on whether you want to use this story or not. I'm not that I'm not wanting to. I'll let you use the discretion. A right to an impartial jury, a jury of your peers, ladies and gentlemen. They waltz you into this court for a trial, and you sit down, and they have what they call you're going to be on jury duty call for the next 3 to 6 months, 3 months, or whatever the hell it is. I know I got called last year, and they completely ruined my life over it. I mean, didn't devastate me, but I'm going to tell you something. It really hurt me bad financially, bad. And I tried to explain to them that it would. And they didn't care. And that's against my rights also. You have the right. I mean, your duty is to serve on a jury, but the jury foreman, the head of the jury, is actually supposed to listen to why it would cause you financial hardship and not require you to go at that time if you could maybe serve at a later time. And I explained to her that it would cause a big financial hardship for me, and it did. And I don't know if I'll ever recover from it. I'm not public about it. I don't want to be public about it. But it's cost me probably anywhere between $30,000 and $50,000 that I'm in debt over because of it. And that to me is when that was like the final nail in the coffin as far as me believing in a system, because I got railroaded by our system. That's supposed to be fair and impartial. And I pay attention to different trials, not just political trials, or I see political persecution all the time, but I pay attention to a whole lot of things. And I see people walk with a slap on the wrist. Hell, here's a good example. Hunter Biden, his tax fraud and a gun charge when he wasn't supposed to be in possession of a gun and discarded it in a dumpster close to a school. I mean, it's all over. It's a two-tiered justice system, and I don't appreciate it, because you come after hardworking guys like me that's just trying to make a living and keep his head afloat, and you don't care. It's like, well, too bad, you should have followed the laws. Well, your laws is what screwed me up. You weren't following the laws. Your people that are in charge shouldn't have been in charge, because they don't know what the laws are. And I tried to explain that to the jury foreman, and she didn't care. She hung the phone up on me, and she wouldn't return my phone calls. So I either risked a bench warrant if I didn't show up to jury duty, or I turned down a lot of money, temporary money that I was making at the time, that I would not see again, and I explained that to her, and she didn't care. And that really, without me just flying off the handle right now, it did not sit well with me. I think it was very unfair. It wasn't right, and I was more than willing, like I told her, can I do it at a later date when this project ends? Because then I can finally get ahead with some stuff that I needed to get ahead with the federal government. And nope, it didn't matter to her. So anyway, you have the right to a trial of your peers. So when they march you in for jury duty and they're saying, well, do you know this guy? No, I don't know him. What do you know this guy? No. Everybody's like, no, I don't know him. He's charged with this. Does that bother you? Blah, 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 blah. Under the Constitution, a jury of your peers are people that know you or know your character. And you get to choose. And in some sense, I listened to a guy that was very, very well informed in the Constitution, and I've listened to him quite a bit, and he makes a lot of sense, and he's won numerous law cases because of this. Now, I'm not saying that you can go pick and choose which friends you want to come and, because those are my drug buddies, and they're going to get me off this meth charge. Yeah. No, it's not like that. But it should be people that at least know of you or who something about you in some sense.
Well,
not a stranger off the street.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. Because people who know you are going to be biased one way or the other. When I hear jury of my peers, that's more being a jury of people who are like me. So it may mean a jury of people who are my same economic view, my same social.
No, I didn't
criteria.
Mean like your best friends or people that you chummed around with in high school or nothing like that. I meant is somebody that knows where your background is, your character. You know what I'm saying? Not making sense.
Now, what the Supreme Court has come back and ruled on, and we talked about this a little bit last week or 2 weeks ago, was that jury of your peers, well, let's put it this way. The Supreme Court has stated that your trial and your jury must come from the area where your crime was committed. Okay, so we touched upon this a couple weeks ago on whether trials should be moved outside of an area because of the impact to that area. Well, so far the Supreme Court has basically stated that no, I mean that trial has to be in the area where the crime was committed. Now, if you don't happen to be from that area, how would it be a jury of your peers?
Right. That there, that's already a conflict of interest, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
let's take an example here. There is a gentleman that Bull and I both know. We'll take an example because he gave us permission to. We don't need to mention any names or any of that. He went to trial, and I can't remember the exact details, and Bull can probably fill me in, but it had to do with law enforcement. And who sat on the law, or who sat on the jury? But an ex-law enforcement officer. So what way do you think he's going to vote, or, you know,
right,
cast his vote guilty or not guilty?
And my thing is, how does that person survive to be on the jury? Where did that system break down that allowed a law enforcement person to be on this jury when this was basically an argument between this person who was charged and law enforcement? I mean, it was basically that he was over an issue of law, of his opinion of law enforcement. So how does that person get through the process? I mean, because the lawyers are supposed to be able to have their say and get people thrown off. How does that guy make it through?
Right, because basically this guy that we know basically told a different law enforcement officer that he thinks he's corrupt and blah, 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 blah. And honestly, there's a lot of local county sheriff's departments and police departments in this country all over. Not all of them, but there's some that are corrupt, that have ties with prior law enforcement, that have ties with the judges, that have ties with the DAs. I can give you a prime example, and this will blow your mind if you go research it. Go look in the early 80s. It's called Mena, Arkansas. Teenagers that were found dead on the railroad tracks that they claim got ran over by a train. Well, they did get ran over by a train, but they did an autopsy. Even the county coroner lied and said that they were high when they got ran over. They must have passed out on the train tracks.
Yep.
Even though they found stab wounds in the one's back, the police departments were guilty. The DA was guilty. The governor at the time, Bill Clinton, was involved some way or another. The CIA was, now they find out, was involved with doing drug running through Mena, Arkansas, from the Iran-Contra scandal, that whole deal from, You look at that story, and it will absolutely blow your mind of corruption. And yet, those two teenagers, their murder has never been solved. So that's what I'm talking, I wanted to give you an example of what is going on in our country, not just in the state of Minnesota or South Dakota or North Dakota. It's all over our country. Evil people, bad people have been in positions of power for way too long, and they've collaborated, and now you're seeing the breakdown of what a system that was created was meant to be for good, and an equal and fair system, with the division in politics and division of everything, black, white, green, yellow, everything. You're seeing a breakdown of that. At this point, it's a lot faster paced than I would have thought it would have been at this point, but you're seeing a breakdown of that system, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why Bull decided that, you know, it was time to start a different political party. And we're all realists. We don't think we're going to waltz in and take over the presidency next election cycle. We do realize that we have to start taking this country back one district at a time, if we can. And that's what we're working on. But go ahead, Bull.
Now, one of the a recent ruling, and when I say recent, I'm talking 2020, that the Supreme Court made in relation to the Sixth Amendment, and since we're speaking of juries, is for the longest time, it's always been assumed that for somebody to be found guilty, it needs to be a unanimous decision by the jury. That any one juror saying not guilty results in at least a hung jury. Well, two states had decided to change that law and basically said it only required a majority to be found guilty, Oregon and Louisiana. Well, in 2020, the Supreme Court did turn around and rule that no, to be found guilty, it must be a unanimous decision by the jury of your peers. So they quoted the Sixth Amendment on it, but that was one of the big rulings as regards to the Sixth Amendment that the Supreme Court has made in recent times. Because most of the big ruling or most bigger rulings in, when it comes down to the juries and so forth was made in the 70s when a lot of those were when they say jury of your peers. Did that mean if you are a male, it can only be men on the jury? Or if you are white, does that mean you're entitled to an all-white jury? These were major cases decided in the 70s when it came to the Sixth Amendment.
Oops, sorry. I had my phone on mute. I just pulled a bolt.
Yeah, I must say, like you talk about your uncomfortable silences there.
Those are extreme. Or I'm sorry, Supreme Court rulings that you were talking about there.
Yep.
Okay. We are realists. All of us, everybody that I went to the convention with, when I looked around that room that day, let me just give my experience. I looked around the room and I seen a lot of people that were just come from different walks of life that just want to live their life and be left alone by a tyrannical government. And I seen a lot of pain in people's eyes, but yet I seen a lot of hope in people's eyes that there's finally a small group of people that are trying to do something. And everybody asks the same question when I say we need to stand up. I've said it for the last 2.5 years. We need to stand up. And the question has always been, well, what do we do? What do we do? We're doing it. Bull did it. And, graciously, allowed me to come in and meet everybody. And I got voted in and to be a part of the board at large. And I'm happy about that. And I'm proud about that. And I want to do my part in trying to make a change in this country from a legal standpoint and a constitutional standpoint. don't think for one second that it hasn't crossed my mind a million times of going all rogue and, doing what our forefathers did. Because I've gotten to that point sometimes where I'll upset I've been with how I've been treated by my government, the government that you pay taxes. Well, why do I got to pay taxes if I'm not represented? It's taxation without representation, isn't it? But I pay taxes to you so you can send it over $20 million or $20 billion over to Pakistan for gender studies. I never paid taxes for that. I pay taxes to fund our military, to fix our roads, to help people in need. I don't pay taxes for you to fund your special projects, your pet projects. That bothers me, and it still does to this day. But again, that's just my little 1-minute rant there. I want to keep it on subject without me sharing too much of my thoughts and opinions, because obviously I'm very disgruntled and very upset with our government at this point, and a lot of us are. But we also need to remain, keep a calm head about us. Because if you don't have a calm head going into these situations, as much as you want to start throwing the MF-er around, you know, and start punching people out, that never solves anything. It only makes things worse. The best way you can do to beat them is beat them at their own game. And trust me, they've got one hell of a board set up on us. Moving on with the Sixth Amendment. So we just covered the right to an impartial jury. Did we cover that sufficiently? I think we had, me and Bull had both had differing opinions on that, and which is good. You get to hear differing opinions, and if you disagree or you agree, call in. Call in and let your voice be heard. That's what this show is all about, too. Your voice should be heard. If you have something to say, call in. I'll share that number one more time. And that phone number is 516, if you're listening on the Internet, 516-387-1733. And write that phone number down, put it in your phone, and save that as your favorites as the radio show or the Constitutionalist, whatever you want to name that, because that works for Tuesday nights and Thursday nights. And soon there's going to be two more nights added to this network. And we just renamed this network the Patriot Network. When I say patriot, that's anybody that believes in this country and the Constitution and what our forefathers intended for us, which has lasted well over 240 years at this point. So I don't care if you vote Democrat, Republican, Independent, or Constitutional Republic Party. As long as you believe in the Constitution, and if you see something going on that you don't agree with your party and that they're not honoring that Constitution, that's your cue to jump ship, because I did in 2020. I jumped ship from the Democratic Party, even though I don't consider myself full blue or full Democratic. I believed in John F. Kennedy's party. I believe in Robert F. Kennedy. In most of his stuff. You're never going to agree with somebody 100%, by the way. But I like RFK Jr. I do believe him to be a pretty honest man. Again, I shared earlier in the show that I am on board with the Trump train, and that doesn't mean that I hate everybody. I just seen something that maybe some of you haven't seen yet. That's okay. And maybe I haven't seen it all. I'll admit that, too. But all I'm asking you, ladies and gentlemen, when you listen to the show, to read the Constitution and to look at what your elected representatives are doing that are distorting the Constitution on both sides, whether it be Trump, RFK, Biden, Obama, doesn't matter, whoever you support. Look at the big picture. Quit listening to your echo chambers, because they're not going to help you. I used to do that. But anyway, I want to get to the last part of this. You have the right to know who your accusers are and the nature of charges and evidence against you. And when they say the nature of charges and evidence against you, that is so you have a right to defend yourself in the court of law. Now, if I accused somebody I didn't know of sexually assaulting my daughter without any evidence or any of that, I could just go in and say, because my daughter had a vendetta against somebody, I could say, yeah, Joe Blow down the street, yep, he sexually assaulted my daughter, go arrest him. They may go arrest him. But I'm going to tell you something. When they go arrest him, he has the right to know who accused him, which would have been me or my daughter. And he would have to write what he's accused of. Well, you're being arrested for rape. And what's the evidence? Well, she said you did. That would be the only evidence in that case because, well, my daughter lied to me because she had a vendetta. Not that my daughter would do that, but I'm just giving you an example. So that's kind of what that means, is you have a right to who your accuser is. And because I made the perfect example, because when you get arrested for something and somebody they tell you who is accusing you, and it's somebody that's been harassing you for months and months and months and months, or even years, or stalking you or any of that, automatically If you have that documented, you have a defense case. Unless you actually did something and they have proof of it, of course. So that's a very important part of the Sixth Amendment. What are your thoughts on that, Bull?
Oh, and there's been numerous cases where the Supreme Court has ruled on this as being a vital part of your ability to defend yourself. Because you've had cases before where you've had these anonymous people or they're testifying behind a screen or so forth. And the Supreme Court has basically come back and say, no, the defense actually has to be able to identify you and question you. And there's so many times right now where I think that sometimes the government finds a way around that at points, which is, you start looking at some of the cases when you have your confidential informants. The government a lot of times gets away without having to put their CIs on the stand because it would put them in danger. But at the same time, if these people are contributing to the case against somebody, shouldn't they be required to get on the stand and testify? And otherwise, doesn't that violate somebody's constitutional right to face their accusers? Right in line with this is the right to a public trial. Well, when you start getting to the situation with President Trump and these classified documents, are they going to hide this information from the public because they were classified documents and Trump won't really get a full opportunity to defend themselves on it? That's going to be some of the questions to be asked.
I'm sorry. Sorry about the delay, ladies and gentlemen. I just got we might have to go over just a few minutes here, Bull. you just received the same message I did. Did you see that? Senator Grant.
Yep.
Yep, Senator Grant Hochschild, fined for overspending in crucial Senate race. Now, here's where you're going to like the Constitutional Republic Party, because fair is fair and right is right, right? So let me just read this to the audience. The Campaign Finance Board has fined Senator Grant Hochschild for overspending by $4,000 in his 2022 state Senate election. Candidates who agree to accept the public subsidies for the race also agree to a strict spending limits. Republican Party of Minnesota Chairman David Hahn released the following statement. This campaign violation of overspending isn't a big surprise after Grant Hochschild voted like a big spending liberal as a senator. He overspent to get elected, and then he overspent your tax money and voted to raise taxes to make up the difference. In a race decided by less than 1%, $4,000 in illegal spending can go a long way. Hochschild campaigned as a moderate, promising to lower the cost of living for Iron Range families, and now we see his reckless campaign spending carried over to his work as a senator. Despite his campaign promises to lower taxes, Hochschild failed to deliver on eliminating the Social Security tax and instead voted with urban progressive Democrats to spend the entire $18 billion surplus, increase government spending by 38%, and raise taxes by $9 billion through higher fees on working families. Northern Minnesotans deserve a senator who will not only respect the election and campaign laws of our state, but also respect the hard-earned paychecks of working Minnesotans. Republican Party of Minnesota Chairman David Hahn. Okay, let's touch on this before we end the show. I think that's very important. I know it doesn't coincide with the Sixth Amendment per se, but I want to share something with you, ladies and gentlemen. I've seen something, a video that was caught in secret, maybe I should say. Yeah, I think it was either in South Carolina or North Carolina of either she's running for Senate or is a sitting United States Senator, or not United States, but a state senator. One of those. I can't remember the exact name. I'll have to go back and look it up. She was caught on a call to a jailmate in a jail talking about how the Democrats, now I'm not trying to make this Democrats and Republicans, I'm just giving you an example here because this happens to be a Republican here. And this may tie into this. I don't know. I don't have enough information yet, but it doesn't look good. Anyway, so this lady was talking to a jailmate, a guy behind bars, said, the only way we can change this system is by infiltrating the Republican Party by running as Republicans. And once we get in, then the Republicans, our candidates can vote with us. Now, this gave me right away when I seen that, it gave me an eerie feeling like, holy man, are they doing that here in Minnesota too? Now, I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm surprised because if you knew the things I knew, ladies and gentlemen, about the current Democratic Party, not all of them, but there's a faction of them that, well, a good majority of them in Congress are actually registered socialists, literally. I've done my research. But these people are trying to infiltrate our government at all costs and on all avenues, and they will do so, which is why you're seeing a lot of people that consider themselves conservatives. Why is that guy voting the way he's supposed to be a Republican? No, sir. That's not what's happening here. That's why I think it's so important that a non-corrupt party comes into play and starts giving these corrupt bastards a run for their money. And excuse my language, but I'm really tired of seeing it. But go ahead, Bull.
Well, that's what was important. One of the things that was important to me because we kept on, and I faced criticism almost every day with people going, why don't you just run within the confines of the GOP? Why don't you just run as a Republican? And I'm more of a lot of, because that's not who we are. Okay, we want people to know this is who we are. We want to be honest and upfront. We don't want to play these games. We don't want to go and remake something into the image we think it should be. We want to say, this is us, and be completely open and upfront about it. Then we're not going to go over here and pretend to be something else to try to change it. We're going to be us. We're not stuck in two boxes, okay? And this whole thing with Grant up there, I mean, it's a big deal because the Democrats only held the Senate by one senator. So if that had went another way, we would be looking at a completely different state today than we are. Because the GOP would have held the Senate, the Democrats would have held the House, and none of these far-reaching things would have gotten shoved through. More likely than not, including these attacks on third parties, which Chairman Hahn partnered with the Democrats on, I might add. Him and the Democrats both worked together to make it harder for third parties to be on the ballot. So never underestimate the willingness of Hahn to work with Democrats when it's something that would politically benefit him personally. Me and Chairman Hahn have gone back on a numerous public rants against each other. I don't hold him in very high regard at all. He basically attacked grassroots conservatives because they supported me in part of my campaign. And I firmly believe that has a lot to do with, you've heard about any of the issues going on with the delegates that were not seated in Otter Tail County. That has something to do with that as well. But yeah, these the one thing that the Democrats and the Republicans will agree on is that they should be the only ones sharing power with each other. And that's a whole different rant for a whole different – we could do a whole episode on that if you really want to get me all worked up. But yeah, I mean, it's
– And that's, and that's what this show is about that, though, Bull. And I know it's about – you know, we call ourselves a constitutionalist, but, you know, after we've done six episodes now, and I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, we go over the Constitution – but we can sprinkle in, I shouldn't even say sprinkle in, we should add in a lot of your experience running for public office so people get it, so they understand what is really happening with our politics. This isn't,
yep.
you think you're going to the voting booth and you're voting an R or a D. Behind closed doors, they're smoking cigars, drinking scotch, and they're laughing at you because they are making it almost impossible for a third party to run in any state. I've got friends that ran for office in Kentucky, and I'll maybe have them call in as a guest on the show some night, and explain their experience. Because my friend James ran for I can't remember what district it was in Kentucky. He had all the signatures and he did damn well for his first round. I think he got like 23% of the vote. Like Kentucky's. No, he ran as a libertarian. I'm sorry. Wasn't even running under the Republican Party. He ran against the Republican and still got 23% of the votes. Mm-hmm. And the next year he went to run and come to election time when deadline came and went, oh, we redistricted you. We forgot to tell you about it. You were 6 votes short of being on the ballot. So now he's got to start all over. Door knocking again in a different redistrict. You know, they gerrymandered him because they seen how well he did. So we can explain, and Travis can explain a lot better because he's had more experience than I have in that matter. But the gerrymandering in districts, you know, I've had Representative Jeremy Munson on my radio show on Thursday nights, and he explained a little bit of that too. And we've had Nathan Wessenberg on here too, and you know, these guys, this is the people that you need to listen to, the guys that have had experience that can explain the system to you and what kind of dirty, rotten tricks these politicians are up to retain their power. And that's a fact, ladies and gentlemen. So what else you want to add to that, Bull?
Well, no, it's just... They make it so hard, and they brainwash so many of their supporters. It gets so frustrating to continuously have to fight these battles, especially with people within the GOP who see us as a threat to the GOP here in Minnesota. And I'm telling them, you know, the GOP has already proven they can't win in Minnesota. Why are you so worried about what happens to the GOP? I mean, the GOP has already shown that they don't care about the Constitution. Look at everything they have done or everything they have failed to do. But yet we still get the pushback from them about how y'all are just splitting the conservatives. We're not splitting the conservatives. The GOP is not physically conservative. Nothing about the GOP is what used to be considered conservative. Not today's GOP.
Let me ask you a question.
When you call somebody, when they call somebody a rhino, it's like, I'm sorry, they're not a rhino. They are the new Republican Party. The actual rhinos are the true conservatives at this point.
Let me ask you a question. When you were running for District 7 here in Minnesota,
right?
You had debates, and
yep.
I remember watching those debates, and I don't believe Michelle Fischbach was on those debates. Was she?
Oh, yeah, she was. She got her ass handed to her.
Oh, I was – okay, never mind. I was thinking about that the Democrat that you ran against. She was absolutely horrid. I'm sorry, but I'm not trying to call her a bad person, but she does not belong in politics. I'm just telling you that much.
Well, she was just completely unprepared. I mean, she just thought she was going to be able to show up and did no real homework. No, but I mean, I was thrilled with the showing we had at that debate. I mean, I'm not going to say I was perfect. I wasn't. But I think a majority of the people who actually watched that debate came away going, damn, the third party actually won that debate. Problem is, again, you're on Prairie Public Television. You don't get the big TV debates. You don't get a lot of people didn't see it. I mean, it's
right.
It's,
and again, that's the point
that's
I wanted to make.
My plan.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's the point I wanted to make. When you guys think you're going to the voting booths and you think you're voting Republican or Democrat because I'm Democrat or I'm Republican, you haven't even heard what they stand for. Number one, number two. The media, they're not fair to anybody. The media, they're in on the whole shebang. And that's not just statewide. That's nationwide. You don't get airtime if you're a threat to the system. Well, if you don't have to believe me if you want to or not.
One thing I will say on this particular debate is people at Prairie Broadcast did everything that they could. Michelle Fischbach, who was the GOP congresswoman from this district, who I was challenging, basically pushed it off as late as possible in the election cycle because the majority of the people in this congressional district vote by mail. By the time we actually debated, a majority of the people in this district had already voted. And again, they purposely did that in order to limit the possible damage or repercussions from this debate.
Right, because we are 95 or 99% a red district.
Right.
Am I
so
correct
rural,
on that?
We're about 75%, which is also the part
it's far
that I always get.
Morehead. Right? Morehead and like, and Worthington.
Yeah. But, I mean, you look at the, which is the part that I always argued with the guys who were saying, well, if we vote for you, we're going to give the Democrats a chance. How? 75% of this district is conservative. You could have split me and Michelle 50-50 right down the middle, and the Democrats still would have came in third.
Right.
It wouldn't have made
and
a difference. She
and
was not going to break
28%. Right, and we would have had our foot in the door just to show you what we're all about. So
Yep. If
you're listening to this, any of my followers or my friends that are in our district, which I know a lot of you are, and you're in Bull's district, I mean, we're all basically the whole one-third western part of the state, pay attention when we run a candidate and Bull may or may not run, I don't know, and he doesn't have to announce that here and whenever he feels like announcing it, but just listen to what he has to say. You know, like he just explained to you, you're taking votes away from the Republicans. People are so consumed and so focused on Trump or Biden or, you know, the presidency. Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, that Congress decides what the budget's going to be? Now imagine if we put our foot in the door and we had Constitutional Republic Party candidates that actually won a couple state elections, even one. What kind of wrench that would throw into the usual business of politics in Washington, D.C. and the state governments? You would be a wild card at every single point. And if you're a voter of the Constitutional Republic Party, you can be rest assured that they will not vote. Any candidate will not vote against the Constitution. And I've talked to Bull about this, and he said, absolutely not. As a chair, and I know the vice chair, Stephen, also, they will not put up with that. You will go by the Constitution. So well, be rest assured, these guys stand behind their principles, ladies and gentlemen.
And that's the one thing we ask of our candidates. When a candidate is looking at running for us, I mean, that's the our entire platform is basically follow the Constitution. If you're going to sit here and you're going to say, okay, this is my policy or my position, I'm going to ask you, how does that fall within the Constitution? And we expect our candidates to be able to say, yes, this is why it falls within the Constitution. This is why this is constitutional. And I may not always agree with somebody's interpretation, but that's some of the main question we're going to ask them is to be able to justify what your position is. Is it in line with the Constitution?
Maybe we should start doing something a little different on this show, because we have, like, it's we can do whatever we want to do, and we can decide together, and we'll decide together on air. How's this sound? What if we talk about now next week? It'll be the Seventh Amendment, but what if we discuss the Seventh Amendment? And if any of you guys are listening, want to call in. Again, the phone number is 516-387-1733, and then make sure you press the number 1 once you get through. But if any of you want to get through or come on live, what if we started doing a Q&A at the very tail end of our shows where we discuss the Seventh Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, whatever amendment we're discussing, and we go to a Q&A part, like we kind of done for the last, I don't know, what, 20 minutes now, where we've been discussing stuff other than the Sixth Amendment.
Right.
Maybe that would maybe engage voters just to understand where we stand, where you stand, where the Constitutional Republic Party.us stands. And start advertising that out live on air. We're just going to have a brainstorm. What if we started doing that at the end of every show, and I advertise that when I set up the radio show, say, by the way, at the end of the show, live Q&A, if you want to call in and ask questions, here's the phone number.
I am all for it.
What do you? Yeah. I think, see, this is a beautiful part about our platform that we have here. I want to keep it under an hour, even though we've gone over an hour a little bit. I know Bull's busy and I'm busy, but that's okay. Sometimes we just got to go with the flow. But for now on, we'll make adjustments as we go. And for now on, after we're done discussing whatever constitutional amendment that we're discussing, at the end of that, we'll go into a Q&A where you can discuss what we just discussed, or you can ask Bull or anybody any question, or guest, if we have one on, any question you want to ask, just call in and press the number 1. I'll bring you live on air, and you can ask that question live on air. As long, let me just put a stipulation here. If you're going to get on here and start, you know, using the F-bomb and being completely disrespectful, you can disagree. That's fine, but because I've there's other listeners, and I will not put up with that on this radio show, on any of my radio shows, so... I just want to put that out there. But, yeah, I think that's a good idea, Bull. And, yeah, I think too much, ladies and gentlemen. That's my problem. My mind is always turning like a hamster. And it needs a little grease right now, honestly. But squeaking, the hamster wheel squeaking. But I think we're good for tonight. Bull, unless you have something else you'd like to add?
No, that's about it.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, then let's wrap this up. We went over by a few minutes, which, by the way, we do have this set up for 3 hours. We do not want to do this for 3 hours every Tuesday night. We're too busy to do that. However, we're not too busy for you. So if we all of a sudden got 50 callers on here, probably stay on for the full 3 hours, more than likely. I just want everybody to know, please share this out with your friends and family. Let them know who we are, what we are, and what we're all about. Have them listen to us. Let them decide for themselves. I don't care if they're Democrat. I don't care if they're liberal, Republican, conservative, libertarian, independent. No matter if you're white, black, green, or yellow. Have them tune in, share the link out, and say, hey, just go listen to these guys. And if they have a question, I promise you, call in. I'll give the guest call-in number every single episode, and I'll advertise that guest call-in number up. So I promise you that if they call in, we will be polite, even if you disagree with us. I promise you that. I swear on my children's life. Unless you're disrespectful, then you had a bad phone connection. But because I can control that. But no, you are welcome to disagree with us. You are welcome to call in and try to prove us wrong. And sometimes you may prove us wrong, and we will stand corrected because we're honest people. I guarantee you that about us. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say this is the end of The Constitutionalist, episode number 6. And Travis, for your closing statements, I'll give you the floor, and then I'll close it up after that.
I'd just like to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. And please, I mean, we want your involvement. Please come on here, ask any questions, get involved. I mean, that's the only way we're going to change the system that we have now, is that if as Americans we all come together and get involved and kind of force the issue. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate it, and have a great week.
All right. Thanks, Bull. And just to recap, ladies and gentlemen, we will try to be on every Tuesday night, but Bull's busy, I'm busy. We try our best. And trying to make a new political party work, and being, you know, Travis a farmer and me a trucker, it's tough. But we will try our best to please you and to give you the information that you need. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to change this country until we start researching our candidates and educating ourselves of really what is going on with our government. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank each and every one of you that listened to us tonight and listened to us for future shows. We appreciate each and every one of you, and we're hoping and we're praying that you will just give us a shot. Just listen to us. Listen to what we have to say. We're not asking you to, you know, make us any kind of a hero. We just want you to listen to what we have to say. That is all. I hope you all have a great week. God bless each and every one of you, and we will see you next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central Time for The Constitutionalist number 7 involving the 7th Amendment. You all have a great night. Have a great week. Stay safe.